Jay, are you a Shohei Ohtani fan?
I think so.
Jay Caspian Kang is a writer for The New Yorker and a sports fan. I called him up to talk baseball. You don't sound very committed.
Well, I think that normally, under normal conditions, that I wouldn't be. Just because, you know, he plays for the Dodgers, he played for the Angels. Those are not teams that I generally root for, but nobody since Babe Ruth has really done what he's done. It's been like 100 years, I guess. So,
Shohei Ohtani has been MVP twice now. His nickname is Showtime. And the comparison with Babe Ruth comes up a lot.
You know, he doesn't really speak too much to the media, at least not in English. And so it's almost like this alien landed in the major leagues and started doing things that nobody thought was possible ever, right? And so, it's hard not to be drawn in by it.
But for the last few days, and this is why I really called up Jay, Ohtani has been better known as part of a massive betting scandal.
Shohei Ohtani, the golden boy of Major League Baseball, the next Babe Ruth, the highest paid athlete in American sports, I believe, of all time, is in some hot water right now for some...
What we know is that $4.5 million seems to have vaporized from Ohtani's personal bank account, sent to an illegal bookmaker who's been under federal investigation. At first, the story was that Ohtani lent money to his interpreter, who'd gotten himself in over his head. Then, Ohtani said his interpreter had stolen the money.
But that raised the question, how does your interpreter have access to your bank account? Mm-hmm. So a lot more questions still to be answered.
Now, Mizuhara... Something stinks here, Alex. We're gamblers. We know.
I know. My first thoughts were that I was very surprised by the size of the star that had gotten caught up in this.
Because he's baseball's biggest star.
He's the biggest baseball star in the world that we've had for many, many years.
But Jay had a second thought about what happened here. A more complicated thought. And it was something along the lines of course. Because for the last few years, Jay has watched as the worlds of gambling and major league sports have become completely enmeshed.
It's not that you can't just watch a game without seeing constant advertisements for it. You can't even watch like a sports opinion show without constant mention of it. And that people who have no experience betting at all, right, are now being asked to give their opinion on betting lines and things like that. And they're not qualified to give gambling advice. I mean, almost nobody is qualified to give gambling advice. The best gambling advice is just don't gamble. There's such an oversaturation of gambling content that I do think it's a little bit odd to ask players to just never respond to it, you know, to be the only people who are completely impervious to what is clearly an attempt to hook every other person in America.
Do you think the Ohtani scandal could be some kind of turning point for sports betting in major league sports?
I think it depends on how it shakes out. Given the ubiquity of sports betting right now, there's going to be a huge scandal, even if it's not Ohtani, right? It's coming, and it'll probably arrive sometime in the next 3 years. If it doesn't, I will be shocked by that.
Today on the show, how gambling took over the world of sports and why the major leagues might be about to face the consequences. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. Okay, before we get much further, I want to just lay out the fact that you love gambling. Is that fair, Jay?
Probably. I mean, I do it a lot, or I have done it a lot in my life, yeah.
How'd you get into it?
Very strangely, in my very large public high school in North Carolina, we had a Taco Bell stand. And I think the first time I got into gambling was because we would all gamble for Taco Bell money. We play this sort of variation of gin rummy. And, you know, I realized that I was kind of good at it, or at least I was very lucky. And so, you know, you win a lot at that tender age and something gets burned in your head, I think. And, you know, you're never the same.
So how did we get here? Where it's like when you were growing up, you'd be like gambling a little bit with your friends for taco money, versus now kids just see gambling everywhere.
You know, 2018, there's a Supreme Court decision that overturned federal ban on sports betting, which opened the way for state individual states to allow sports betting within their borders.
Since you're a gambler, how's legalization changed the experience of sports betting for someone like you? Like, I know in the past you've gone to Vegas to bet. Do you have to do that now? Like, when you go, what's that like?
I live in California where it's still illegal, so I do still have to go to Las Vegas. It's become much more like the apps there, though, where, you know, instead of sort of walking up to a teller and the guy talks to you and you have a conversation, there's just these little kiosks, right? It's almost like when you go to the train station and you punch in a Metro card or whatever.
Sounds like going to the ATM, only it's kind of the opposite of the ATM.
Yeah.
Or giving the machine the money.
Right. In that way, it's a little less glamorous.
Is it fun?
No, it's definitely less fun. And, you know, I go with a lot of my friends from growing up, and we have talked quite a bit about whether it's even worth going anymore because it's so similar to just sitting on our couch, right? Like whether some of the fun and I guess seedy glamour of gambling has been sucked out by this appification of gambling.
You talk about the appification of the gambling experience. Is that how most people are gambling?
Yeah, I think that in the same way that everything in our lives has been funneled now through our phones, that most gambling probably is through the phone. There are now slot machines that you can play on your phone. You can kind of like use your phone and you can turn on a live stream, and the live stream is of a person at a blackjack table, a real person, right? And the person is dealing real cards and you can place bets. And then, you know, they deal out your hands. And so it's like, it's kind of like having a weird in-person experience, but it's entirely through your app and entirely through the internet.
Explain how the apps are changing the kinds of bets people are placing, especially when it comes to sports.
Right. I think this is the big change, which is that it used to be that, let's say that the Dallas Cowboys are playing the Philadelphia Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys have to win by 7 points for you to win your bet, right? That used to be the way that almost everybody bet on sports.
Yeah, pretty simple.
Very simple. And honestly, given that there are 22 people playing on the field at any time, it's kind of hard to fix, right? Because like, if you're just one person who's trying to throw the game, it's actually not that easy.
Too many people involved.
Yeah, there's too many people involved. There's too many, if you wanted to fix it, too many people would know, you know? But what's changed now is that most bets that are taken are a larger percentage, and actually exploding percentage of bets that are taken are these things called single game prop parlays, right? And a prop bet is basically, is an individual player going to do X or Y, right? Like, so let's say that we have our fictional game between the Cowboys and the Eagles. Is the running back for the Cowboys going to gain over, let's say, like 65 yards that game, right? And you can bet he's going to gain over or under. And that what you can do with those bets is that there are sometimes up to hundreds of these prop bets offered per game. And you can pick like 7, 8, all up to like 20 of these, put them all together and say, either all of these are going to be right, or if one of them is wrong, then the whole bet falls apart. But if I get all of them right, let's say I go 20 for 20, then I can bet like $2 and win like, let's say like $25,000, right? So it's like much higher yield, higher reward, but infinitely higher risk type of bet. These have become very popular because, you know, people, they want to believe that they can bet $2 and make like $200,000, you know, whatever the odds payouts on these are. And so that's how sports betting has changed quite a bit, is that instead of a simple what team is going to win by how many points, you now have people doing all sorts of variations of parlays. And the sad part about it is that these bets are just way, way worse for the customer, right? They're much, much better for the book. But because they give this fantasy that you can hit one and be, you know, your life will change, like that's the drive for them.
What is it about the apps that made these kinds of more complicated bets more possible?
Well, look, it's basically that you can list them all. If you went to a sports book, right, like they don't offer all these bets because it's too complicated. They only have a certain amount of space that they can do, and they don't have people who really want to calculate what all these lines should be. Now that you have these big apps and they can just roll out whatever bet they want, they can take down any bet that they want, and they have giant teams that are crunching all this sort of stuff, you know, it's a lot easier for them to offer more and more and more bets.
I mean, the NCAA recently announced they want states to ban prop bets so people aren't betting on their individual players. Do you think that's going to happen?
You know, that was actually quite a moment when I was in Las Vegas this past, or 2 weekends ago for the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. I realized that, you know, there's a game where Colgate was playing, right? Colgate is I think it's in upstate New York, right? Like a very small school in upstate New York. And I imagine that their players are not getting much money, right? And that they're not going to have professional careers. They're going to go work at McKinsey or something like that, right? And you could bet on whether or not a player on Colgate was going to get like over 10 points or something. And I was like, this is out of control. I can bet on some dude at Colgate. And then I thought about it, it's just like, if those types of bets are available for college kids who are not making any type of money, what is their incentive to not occasionally indulge in that type of thing, right? It's not like they even have to throw the game. They just have to like miss a couple shots. And that's why I think these types of scandals are going to become quite ubiquitous, is because it's so easy now. For players who are not making millions and millions and millions of dollars a year, the incentives are just so clear. And even for the players who are making millions and millions of dollars a year, if they have a gambling problem, the amount of money that is being wagered doesn't matter. And so some of them are going to fall into this. And that's where I see the big problem, the ease with which, and just the wide, wide, wide spread of bets that exist. Any one of them can be rigged in one way or the other.
We'll be right back. It's hard to say how much the business of sports gambling has grown in the last few years. That's because a lot of the gambling that happened before sports betting was legalized went uncounted. Jay says one reason we should be doubtful of more dramatic statistics showing a huge increase in the number of people betting is that people who weren't interested in gambling before, they may not be any more interested now.
Adults are either problem gamblers or they're not. They can be exposed to gambling in a way that will trigger a problem gambling impulse in them. But I think that people who don't gamble just don't gamble, right? I mean, Mary, I don't know if you live in a state where gambling is legal, but, you know.
Oh, 100% New York.
Right, but have you started gambling all the time on sports because of this?
No. I was telling Paige, my producer, I was like, I think it's like I was born without an appendix or something. Like, I just don't have the gambling, like, organ inside me. So I'm just like, oh, okay.
My wife is the same way, you know, has zero interest in it, despite being around me, which is like basically being a constant gambling head. And so, I think that is true of adults. The unresolved question is whether that is true of teens. And I guess I think about myself in that way, which is that if they had never opened that Taco Bell in my high school, you know, if we hadn't been incentivized to play, you know, this weird variation of gin rummy all the time for money in math class, you know, would I have had these problems? And I don't know the answer to that question. My sense is that I was always wired probably to do this, you know, and my buddy was probably always wired to do this. The problem that I see is that kids who are predisposed to have these problems do not have the ability to manage their problems, and they have full exposure to it in a way that I did not, right? Playing for 25 cents point is not the same as being able to hook up your parents' credit card to a gambling app and bet thousands of dollars if you want. That's a lot different. And so that's my main concern about it when it comes to the kids, is just, does it offer a scale and a convenience so that the kids who are problem gamblers are going to fall into some hole that actually ruins their life?
Yeah. I mean, you've talked about there being two legitimate worries when it comes to legalized sports betting. The first is that app-based betting will create an explosion in the number of gambling addicts.
Well, I don't believe that argument. The argument is that, like, basically you can hook anyone on gambling. And I don't think that's true. I think that basically what will happen is, much like weed legalization, that there will be a spike in the number of users for a short period of time, and then suddenly, and then at some point it'll go back down and be kind of normal. Many people that I know, when New York legalized sports betting, downloaded the app, they bet for about 2 weeks, right? And then they have never looked at the app again. I think that that's a very normal type of behavior for this type of thing.
I think there are two things I'd say to maybe push back against what you're saying now. One is what we just talked about, which is kids and the fact that people are being exposed younger to gambling. It's sort of all over the sports. So if you're just sitting there watching a game with your dad, you can't avoid it and you're going to have natural interest. So reaching people younger. And the other thing is volume of people reached. There used to be real barriers to entry when it came to gambling. You had to make a real effort to do it, be in a specific place, all those sorts of things. That's not really the case anymore. So a lot more people are engaging with gambling. And when more people are engaging, I think naturally the number of people who are going to have a problem is also going to go up. What do you say to that?
Well, I think you're right in many ways, but I think that the scale might be different. So your argument, I think, is correct on the merits, right? Which is that, let's say that 10% of people are problem gamblers. Just hypothetically, let's say that. And let's say there's 1,000 people in America, then that means you have 100 gamblers, right? But if you increase the number of people who are exposed to gambling to 10,000, then you have 10 times that number of gamblers, even though the percentage is the same, right? I think that's true. But I do think that most people who have gambling problems, by the time they're adults, have figured out how to gamble. That there are ways that they find their fix despite barriers. And I think that while there are people who have not been exposed, that that number is not easy to quantify. And I would imagine that the proportion of it is a little bit lower than a lot of people would think.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair. I do think you have this other concern, which is that legalized sports betting challenges the integrity of sports, both for the players and for the fans. Like, you talk about how at this fundamental level, people watching need to believe in sports. You have to believe that what you're seeing is real and rules are being followed and teams are working together to make something happen. How is that sense being undermined by legalized sports betting?
The most popular complaint of any sports fan is that the game is rigged.
Huh.
That the game is rigged by some shadowy entity. Now, this is always like a fringe, almost like ironic concern that people say, right? It sounds a little conspiratorial and crazy. It is going to sound a lot less conspiratorial and crazy, and it already has, the more deeper and deeper we go into this.
Why?
Because we're going to have way more scandals. We have had way more betting scandals in American professional sports than we had in years, in the past 3 years. I would say that that is quite bad. I mean, last night we had one of the great nights of women's basketball ever.
LSU versus Iowa.
I live in the East Bay. I was in a bar in Oakland at 4 o'clock on a Monday. It was, you know, every single person in that bar was riveted to this game. And like, that is why sports are good. I don't think any of the people in that bar, maybe a couple, but I don't think most of them had bet on that game. They're still captivated by it. They're still captivated by Caitlin Clark. You need that veneer of dignity, and you need that veneer of, you know, competition for those things to matter to people emotionally.
Yeah. It's interesting to me to think about how all of this kind of spirit of the game stuff trickles down to the players themselves. Late last month, All-Star Indiana Pacers point guard Tyrese Halliburton told reporters, "To half the world, I'm just helping them make money on DraftKings. I'm a prop." It really hit me to read that. The players themselves are like changing the way they conceptualize what they're doing based on sports betting.
Yeah. A lot of other players have spoken out about this, that they're, you know, they open up Instagram and they have like 500 DM messages of people calling them all sorts, every name in the book, including racial slurs, death threats, because they grabbed an extra rebound and screwed up this person's parlay. You know, on the one hand, Tyrese Haliburton next year will make $35 million a year. And so sometimes I just think, I don't know, it kind of comes with attack territory. On the other hand, man, it really sucks. You know, it sucks to hear that. And it sucks that basketball and the sort of joy that he's giving Indiana Pacers fans and NBA fans everywhere is dimmed by the fact that people are, you know, acting so psychotically towards him over what amounts to, I'm sure for 90% of these bets are like $2 bets. Yeah, it bums me out to hear that. And it definitely isn't just Tyrese Haliburton. Basically, every player who has spoken on this says that this is the main interaction that they have with fans now.
Oh, wow.
Did you score enough points? Or if you have the under on points, how dare you score that extra point? You know, like, you ruined my parlay. And the person just looks at them and just like, what? Like, I don't even know who you are. You know, why would I ever care about that? I think the way in which they've structured these same game parlays are more bound to addiction. I think they're stupider. I think they're less, you know, they're worse products for the customer, and they're pushing them intentionally. And I think that it's ruined a lot of sports for me, I will say.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, do you have fun playing them when you can? I know you're in California, so it's not like you're out there playing them all the time, but I imagine you change locations occasionally.
Yeah, it is less fun, I think. I don't really bet on sports that much because I'm in California. I do think that if sports betting was legal in California, that I would bet more on sports. I think that is true.
Do you think that would be a good thing or a bad thing or a neutral thing?
I think what it would do is that it would sort of take away from my ability to enjoy sporting events like what happened last night in the women's NCAA tournament, because, you know, you would have been more worried about the $20 or whatever you bet on that game, which, you know, and then it's just $20. But like, it's hard to like not care about that. And when you don't have money on the game, you can enjoy something like last night. You know, I used to be a total nothing is wrong. Everyone is screaming fire. There's no fire. Please stop being so alarmist about this thing.
About gambling.
And now I'm starting to get pushed more into the, you know, there's probably a problem here camp. And my thinking has changed about it a lot in the last 2 years.
Jay, I'm really grateful for your time and for coming on the show. Thanks for doing it.
Thank you, Mary.
Jay Caspian Kang is a staff writer at The New Yorker. And that's our show. If you're a fan of What Next, the best way to support our work is to join Slate Plus. Go on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up. What Next is produced by Paige Osborne, Elena Schwartz, Rob Gunther, Anna Phillips, and Madeline Ducharme. We are led by Alicia Montgomery with a little boost from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations here at Slate. And I'm Mary Harris. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you back here next time.